From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is a special report on the largest oil spill in Alaska's history. I'm Corey Flintoff. So far, officials say 300,000 gallons of crude oil have spilled from the tanker Exxon Valdez, aground on a reef about 25 miles from the port of Valdez. Claire Richardson has more.
20,000 gallons of fuel is leaking from the Exxon Valdez every hour. Coast Guard Petty Officer John Gonzalez says another tanker, the Baton Rouge, should arrive on the scene soon, and workers will begin transferring oil from the disabled tanker onto the Baton Rouge.
We estimate we need to pump at least 415,000 barrels of oil to the Baton Rouge so we can float the Exxon Valdez and be able to see visually the extent of the damage to the Exxon Valdez.
Will there be any special Coast Guard help coming?
Yes, there will. We have some personnel coming up from the Pacific Strike Team in Norton Air Force Base in California. They're on their way up already, along with Exxon. Exxon setting up some of their professionals to help with the cleanup. Alyeska Marine Terminal presently has people on scene, and also barges and tugboats. Others on their way also, and they should be on scene by 1 o'clock this afternoon. The weather's holding up good, and hopefully it stays with it.
And you say that so far it's gone over 4 nautical miles south, the oil slick?
Yes, ma'am.
At this point, would that be pretty difficult to contain?
Well, it's good in the respect that it's going away from land, and it'd be much easier to clean up being in the water rather than going on to the land itself.
If the Coast Guard was following the tanker as it left port by radar, was the tanker warned that they were heading towards the shoal at Bly?
Well, the Exxon Valdez was maneuvering to miss various icebergs in the area. We have two Coast Guard investigators on board, Mark Delosier and the executive officer, Tom Falkenstein, and they're doing the investigation on what caused them to get over so far.
Mayor John Devon says Valdez City Council is meeting this afternoon to discuss the use of emergency funds to aid in cleanup and containment.
The city of Valdez is quite concerned with the protection of the environment right now, and we have, as I think most people are aware, collected taxes in the form of our Zone 3, which we have held, and these monies are available to provide some of the protection that is going to be needed. I've called and made the offer that we'll provide either the funding or manpower and or manpower. The meeting this evening is to get permission from the City Council to budget these funds for this purpose.
Now, these funds have been in litigation and are on appeal. Could you explain a little bit why you haven't used these funds?
Yes. Actually, the state of Alaska is appealing our use of these funds. However, this morning we did send a telegram to the governor's office and advised him that we may be forced to use these funds to help protect our environment. Now, I just learned that Governor Cooper will be arriving in Valdez at 1 o'clock today and will be on site to help support this activity.
Devons adds that there is up to $16 million available in those funds. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Claire Richardson.
The oil spill was terrible news for Prince William Sound fishermen. Cordova District Fishermen United said this morning that all vessels they could muster were on their way to the spill to render any aid they could. State Fish and Game biologist Jim Brady in Cordova says the timing of the spill could be very bad.
Well, we've obviously got a very high degree of concern right now. This is probably the largest oil spill ever to take place in the state of Alaska.
The only immediate effect is on a shrimp fishery located to the west of the spill, but herring are on their way north to the sound, and that's one of the area's major fisheries. Brady says the area of the spill is biologically sensitive for a number of species. Governor Steve Cooper and Community and Regional Affairs Commissioner David Hoffman are expected in Valdez early this afternoon for a first-hand look at the spill. We'll have more on the spill tonight on Alaska News Nightly. This has been a special report from the Alaska Public Radio Network. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is a special update on the oil spill spreading from the grounded tanker Exxon Valdez. I'm Corey Flintoff. Fishermen are fearful of an ecological disaster in Prince William Sound. Exxon is having problems organizing cleanup efforts and removing the remaining million barrels of oil from the vessel. Claire Richardson has a report.
This morning, crews began transferring a million barrels of oil from the grounded tanker to another ship, the Baton Rouge. But so much oil began leaking out of the Exxon Valdez that officials stopped the process immediately. Coast Guard Lieutenant Tripp Rice says the hull of the ship sustained massive damage when it grounded early Friday morning.
Right now, in the opinion of the naval architect who designed the vessel, with the amount of damage that was described to him, the vessel cannot be floated right now in the condition it's in. So there's going to have, when the vessel is floated, it will be after there is some significant patchwork that is done to either all or at least some of the major tanks on board.
A boom has been placed around the tanker, and the transferring of oil has been delayed. A C-130 plane from Florida is standing by in Anchorage, and Exxon wants to use the plane to drop chemical dispersant onto the slick. At a news conference this afternoon, Exxon President Frank Iorosi said he hopes to have better luck than yesterday when calm water stopped the dispersant from breaking up the spill.
So we need to test with the larger droplets to see the effectiveness of that spray. And that'll tell us whether we could depend primarily on dispersants or mechanical pickup.
How did the hiccup test work?
It was marginal.
The people who depend on the resource-rich waters of Prince William Sound are concerned about the effects of dispersants on fish and are angry at the long delay in cleanup. Ray Cesarini owns Seahawk Seafoods in Valdez.
I'm really still concerned as why nobody bothered to try to clean up the oil before it got to the size that it got to. No booning of the ship. And I'm concerned about this dispersement method because that does get into the marine environment in the ocean. It can affect not just bottom fish, it can affect the plankton. We've got, like I said before, hundreds of millions of fry swimming out of streams right now that eat that plankton. And if they eat it, I'm thoroughly convinced they'll die.
The state is also angry at the slowness of Alyeska pipeline officials. The commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation is Dennis Kelso. He says his department has begun an investigation.
A team looking at the overall legal alternatives that are available. And I don't mean by that to suggest that we're focusing on Alyeska, but we clearly have a written oil spill contingency plan and some legal expectations there. We have a statute to back us up. But we are going to be looking at the overall situation, and we're going to make sure that when the time comes, I have the information to make a call, and I certainly will.
Whose fault is this? Whose fault do you see this as being, or is it a combination?
Well, I don't have the information to be able to say who was at fault. And frankly, that's a legitimate and important thing to resolve. But right now, my greatest concern is keeping any more oil from going into the Sound and doing whatever can be done to maximize recovery from this point. So I don't mean to just sidestep that question. If you look at the facts, it's one of those things where you have to say, well, something serious went wrong here, and so far we haven't heard an adequate explanation. No mechanical problems. Sea conditions were good. The vessel was outside the traffic lanes. I don't know what that all means.
Claire Richardson, if you could stay on the line with us just a moment more, what's happening next?
Well, right now, the fishermen from Prince William Sound are meeting with Exxon officials and they're helping them map out and locate the most important sites, the critical sites for fishing. The fishermen are also concerned that creeks and other areas will be protected and keep the oil away from that area. So that's happening now, and then at 6 o'clock tonight, there will be another update, another press conference by Exxon at the Valdez Civic Center.
Thank you. That's Claire Richardson reporting from Valdez. This has been a special report from the Alaska Public Radio Network. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is a special report on the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Prince William Sound. I'm Corey Flintoff. Oil spill and wildlife experts from all across the country are converging on Prince William Sound in an effort to deal with what may be the most damaging oil spill in the nation's history. The Exxon Valdez, a tanker loaded with crude oil from the Trans-Alaska pipeline, left the prescribed shipping lanes Friday morning and ran aground on a reef. It spewed more than 11 million gallons of black crude into one of the most biologically sensitive marine environments on Earth. Cleanup operations began this morning. APRN reporter Steve Heimel is on the scene in Valdez.
Exxon Corporation says 100 people are working this Easter morning attempting to clean up the oil spill. They expect to hire 100 more today. The slick is estimated by the Coast Guard to cover 50 square miles, but Exxon's estimates are far smaller than that. Exxon Shipping President Frank Iorossi says with the calm weather today, there's not much worry about the tanker breaking up, but it does have a severe list, which complicates efforts to unload the oil still aboard, estimated by Exxon at 1 million barrels.
Our concern is not so much that the vessel will lose buoyancy, but our concern is for the list condition with all of the starboard tanks damaged. She just doesn't have any buoyancy on the starboard side.
At the estimated rate of pumping, the lightering will go on for at least a week. Investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board were due in today to talk to the crew of the Exxon Valdez. Fishermen say the tankers have been routinely cutting close to the reef to save time. The pilot had left the ship, and Iorossi now confirms the captain was not on the bridge at the time of the crash either.
I believe he had left the bridge after the pilot was disembarked, and he was just below the bridge in his cabin.
The captain has been relieved of duty. Iorossi says this was not a disciplinary measure, but they did have a replacement available, and they wanted to let the captain rest up and talk to their lawyers. Exxon is trying several measures to contain the estimated 300,000 barrels of oil on the water. They were able to successfully burn some of it last night, estimating about 15,000 gallons consumed. They have skimmers and about 3 miles with more on the way. The spill is so huge that there's no way it can really be contained. Yesterday, Exxon met with fishermen and got an agreement on the areas where booms should be deployed to try to keep the oil off beaches and out of inlets, according to Valdez fisherman Doris Lopez.
The fishermen came to a pretty good agreement because there were certain areas that were already out of the question. The Bly Island area is already out of the question, and that's one of the main herring areas, and they've already decided there's no sense in even trying to do that. We did come to a general consensus. Galena Bay holds a large number, a large variety of the species. They're talking about booming Galena Bay and then another section that leads up to the Esther Island hatchery.
A wildlife rescue effort is underway, and a number of volunteers are showing up to help catch and clean wildlife. Thousands of sea otters live in the area, and some have already been exposed to the oil. Hundreds of birds are also reported oiled. There's also concern about other marine mammals. Exxon is trying to use chemicals to disperse the oil and make it sink to the bottom before it reaches the beaches. That makes a lot of fishermen suspicious.
They're going to pour dispersants on, and then when nobody can take any pictures of an oil slick on top of the water anymore, they're going to say it's all taken care of.
The dispersant does not make the oil less toxic, and biologists warn it will remain in the food chain after sinking to the bottom. But Iorossi says it's really the only way. Mechanical efforts are simply inadequate. For APRN and Valdez, I'm Steve Heimel.
Meanwhile, the mayor of Valdez has asked Governor Cooper for a disaster declaration. But as Peter Kenyon reports from Juneau, the governor appears to be holding off.
Cooper Press aide Terrence O'Malley says the governor is ready to declare an emergency if necessary, but first the state would probably go to the lead federal agency, the Coast Guard, and ask them to step in. Cooper will be consulting with Environmental Conservation Commissioner Dennis Kelso on the state's next step. The state does have an oil spill response fund set up a few years ago, but O'Malley says that fund right now has only $1.6 million in it. While liability is yet to be established, state law can levy steep fines for marine oil spills, $2.50 a gallon and up. That could lead to fines well over $25 million.
That's Peter Kenyon reporting from the Capitol, and this has been a special report from the Alaska Public Radio Network. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is a special report on the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Prince William Sound. I'm Corey Flintoff. The town of Valdez is packed to capacity with oil cleanup crews, government officials, and the media, all trying to make sense of the worst oil spill in North American history. 25 miles to the south, the skies over the stricken tanker are buzzing with helicopters and small airplanes. Claire Richardson was on a Coast Guard helicopter today and filed this report.
The oil lies thick on the water surrounding the grounded tanker Exxon Valdez. From the air, you can see that the protective boom surrounding the ship is not containing the leaking oil. A couple of fishing boats were trying to keep large chunks of ice away from the boom. More than a million barrels of oil must be delicately transferred from the battered Exxon Valdez onto another tanker. The operation is generating a lot of hydrocarbon vapors. The Coast Guard helicopter could not land on deck because of the danger of fumes igniting. The spill spread south of the tanker with trails of oil spreading like tendrils down the Prince William Sound. Skimmers, which scoop oil, are just dots on the surface of the spill. A biological survey of the waters affected by the oil will begin Monday. Dr. Al Mackey, an Exxon environmentalist, says federal, state, and private firms are working together on the survey.
Survey is assessing water quality, sediment quality, and looking at several components of the aquatic food web. We're analyzing population level, population dynamics, as well as any contamination level from hydrocarbons from the spill.
Just 4 miles east of the tanker lies the native village of Tetitlik. The village of 200, with its blue onion dome church, looked peaceful this Easter Sunday. But state crews are busy putting log booms in nearby waters to force any spreading oil away from the shoreline. In Valdez, I'm Claire Richardson.
Fed up with what he called a shockingly poor response by Exxon, Governor Steve Cooper says he plans to go ahead with an emergency declaration for Valdez. Peter Kenyon reports.
When Valdez requested the emergency declaration earlier today, the first response from the governor's office was to check out the legal implications. But now Cooper says he's fed up with the lack of cleanup activity by the oil industry, and unless Attorney General Doug Bailey comes up with a compelling reason to wait, the state is going to move in and do everything it can to protect the rich environment in Prince William Sound.
I don't care what the legal implications are. I don't care how the lawyers sort it out at the end of all this. The number one thing that we have to do is clean up the mess. It hasn't been done so far, and I have to tell you that it's shocking to me, and it ought to be shocking to everybody in the state of Alaska, that the oil industry's response to this has been so poor.
Cooper says DEC Commissioner Denny Kelso is presenting a request this afternoon to the regional response team that the cleanup effort be taken away from Exxon and handed over to the U.S. Coast Guard. For APRN in Juneau, I'm Peter Kenyon.
Investigations continue into what caused the accident, well outside the normal shipping lane, and on what local mariners call the best-known hazard in Valdez Arm. This afternoon, Exxon officials fleshed out their side of the story, claiming that their vessel actually struck another submerged object before running on the reef, and admitting that the officer on the bridge was not qualified. Steve Heimel has the story.
Exxon says the 1,000-foot supertanker struck an undersea pinnacle that laid open the entire right side of the vessel about a mile and a quarter out of the shipping lane. It tried to steer out of the situation and ended up riding up on top of the reef. The pilot had already left, and the ship's master, 20-year veteran Joseph Hazelwood, had retired to his quarters when the pinnacle was struck. In charge was third mate Greg Cousins, a lookout, and a helmsman. Exxon Shipping President Frank Iarossi admits Cousins was not qualified to be piloting.
This particular area, he does not have the pilotage qualification.
Iarossi also says there were no mechanical problems on the tanker and the sonar aboard was capable of detecting the obstacles. A number of questions remain. For APRN in Valdez, I'm Steve Heimel.
This has been a special update on the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Prince William Sound. This coverage is made possible by the member stations of APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network. Alaska Public Radio Network, this is a special update on the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Prince William Sound. I'm Corey Flintoff. Rising winds in the Sound have brought cleanup activities to a virtual standstill as more than 11 million gallons of crude oil that spewed from the Exxon tanker spread over an estimated 100 square miles. Winds on the Sound this morning were reported at 25 to 35 miles an hour, churning waves to 7 feet. 25 miles to the north in the town of Valdez, winds were gusting to 50 miles an hour and most air traffic was grounded. Computerized weather maps prepared by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration project that Naked Island and a number of smaller islands in the path of the spill will be inundated with oil. The high winds are expected to make matters worse. The inaction is telling on everyone's nerves, especially those of the fishermen who depend on these waters for their livelihoods. Steve Heimel reports from Valdez.
The fishermen held a news conference this morning to express their displeasure with what's been done about the spill. Ray Cesarini runs Seahawk Seafoods, a Valdez processor.
I can't believe that people stood up here and said how happy they've been about the reaction to the oil spill.
The fishermen say $100 million could be at stake in this year's fishery alone. Jim Brown of Cordova says already buyers are signaling their worries about the Prince William Sound product.
And already we have reports from both domestic and foreign buyers that they're not interested in producing Prince William Sound seafood products this year. Our worldwide reputation as a seafood producer from our pristine waters of our fjords and inlets was that of the finest quality in the world. Now that reputation has been and will continue to be drugged through an Exxon oil spill.
Fishermen say they've been standing by to help ever since they got word of the nation's biggest oil spill in their waters, and still that offer has not been accepted. Jack Lamb, president of Cordova District Fishermen United, says they're still ready to help and don't want to be seen as an enemy. But David Grimes says oil company and Alyeska promises have repeatedly been broken since the deal was made that located the pipeline in Valdez. They were promised a state-of-the-art traffic control system, adequate treatment of ballast water from incoming tankers, and an adequate spill response capability.
Test drills of the oil spill response team have shown us long before this accident that their response capabilities were pathetic. The fishermen knew, the governmental agencies knew, Alyeska knew, and Alyeska's seven parent companies knew that there never has been an adequate oil spill response capability in Prince William Sound. Quite simply, we believe the oil industry must not be allowed to continue operating with such disregard for the environment and the welfare of citizens of the United States.
At this point, there's little left to do but talk. High winds are preventing most cleanup and even reconnaissance operations. For APRN in Valdez, I'm Steve Heimel.
Meanwhile, investigations by the Coast Guard and the National Transportation Safety Board continue. The NTSB just concluded a briefing for news people, and Claire Richardson is on the line with us now to talk about it. Claire, was there any new information?
Well, the newest information, this comes from National Transportation Safety Board investigators, is that they'll hold a public hearing into this disastrous grounding of the Exxon Valdez in Anchorage within 1 to 3 weeks, and he said starting, you know, about today. So the hearing should begin pretty soon, and it will be involving Exxon spokespersons as well as the Coast Guard and anyone else that might be germane to the investigation.
Were they willing to talk any more or release any more information about the whole issue of responsibility, the officer on the bridge, the fact that the captain was not on the bridge at the time the accident occurred?
Yeah, they said that what they needed to do first was to construct the series of events that led up to the grounding of the tanker, and those questionings will begin this afternoon at the Coast Guard headquarters here in Valdez. As to the responsibility and, of course, the questions of blood alcohol tests, William Woody with the NTSB said that one of the investigators is a mariner and a psychologist, and he'll be talking with the captain about the events that led up to the grounding. However, the blood alcohol tests were sent to an outside lab in the lower 48, and he says they don't think they'll get the results from 1 to 3 days.
Thank you. That's Claire Richardson covering the Exxon Valdez oil spill. This is a special report made possible by the member stations of APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is a special update on the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Prince William Sound. I'm Corey Flintoff. Events are moving fast now in Prince William Sound. The weather has improved enough to allow airplane and helicopter reconnaissance of the Exxon spill, and the news is about as bad as anyone could imagine. Steve Heimel's on the line with us now from Valdez, where he's been trying to keep abreast of a flood of information. Suppose we start with the extent of the damage, Steve. What are those airplane observations telling about where the oil is now?
Well, Corey, planes were out at first light, as you might imagine, and looking over the oil spill. What had happened yesterday was that the winds had pushed most of the oil over to the west side of Prince William Sound. They thought it was going to strike around Knight Island and go down through Montague Strait, and with any sort of luck, flush itself right out of the sound. That was the computer projection, but what is happening is not near so good as that optimistic scenario. It has headed more to the west, due west, and is going around the top of Knight Island, and the result is we're going to see it heading for the mainland. And I talked to Rich Sundet, an environmental field officer for DEC, who was on the first flight at first light. They were using special infrared equipment, so he's not talking here about oil sitting on the beaches and that sort of thing. He's talking about how much oil they were able to sense with infrared, which detects temperature differences on the water. And they saw a lot of it, particularly along the backside of Knight Island, as he describes here.
It was evident in every bay as we proceeded north on the west side of Knight Island. We saw the oil up to about halfway over to Chiniga Island, and we progressed up north, and we reached a solid mass up on the just west of Eleanor Island, and there was oil all the way west on the west side of Naked Island, and that's pretty much about it.
And so that oil is basically now the center, the main body of the oil spill, which is an enormous amount of oil and will continue to pump oil into those same directions, most likely, is probably centered at the top end of Knight Island. It's a little island there. It's called Eleanor Island, I believe.
Steve, we understand that one of the biggest concerns now that the oil appears to have moved behind Knight Island is for two important fish hatcheries there. Is anything being done to protect them?
Well, I wish I could give you a more clear answer on that, but basically things are so busy over at Fish and Game and DEC that I didn't want to interrupt people trying desperately to work out the logistics of getting booms out, finding the right number of survival suits, and all that sort of thing. So I have to give you ambiguous words on that. The two hatcheries are the Main Bay Salmon Hatchery, which is up along the northern end of the area of the mainland that could be contaminated, and also the Armin Cornig Salmon Hatchery, which is down not too far from Latouche Island up above Montague Strait. John Lyman of the Fish and Game Department says they are terribly concerned about those hatcheries.
Hatcheries are priorities. Those are areas we're definitely going to be seeing major actions on. We prioritized that for the Coast Guard, for Exxon, yet last night, late. It's a question of, we don't know what's got to be done, but damn it, you got to keep it out of there. Okay? Those are major priorities.
That's John Lyman of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Steve, just to straighten out, in those computer projections that NOAA did yesterday, it really looked as if most of the oil was actually likely to be flushed out of the Sound through Montague Strait. From what you're able to tell now, what really happened?
Well, it looks like the wind was a little bit more than the computers thought, and that it actually pushed the oil far more to the west, and it went around the top of Night Island instead of going down the east side of it. That doesn't mean there isn't oil on the east side of Night Island. There's plenty of oil going down there, and John Lyman told me that they were very concerned about the habitat as it reaches toward Montague Island.
It's those hatcheries, and then especially the northern end of Montague and Green Island is major rookeries, marine mammal sites, major herring fisheries. What I've heard so far is that the fisheries, the herring up on Naked Island, even though that island's been impacted, the major resource values there as far as the fisheries haven't been hit. The fisheries there are located, the primary fishing, fish spawning areas for herring are located to the west and north shores, and it appears that the oil has hit the island and rolled down and around to the south, and so a major portion of that island hasn't been oiled.
As you might imagine, Corey, the extent of damage from this oil spill and the extent of the spill has spurred additional concern today from a number of officials. I understand that the governor is going to be coming down here later today. President Bush is sending now his Secretary of Transportation, the head of the EPA, and Admiral Yost, the head of the Coast Guard. They are going to make an assessment of the situation at about 4 o'clock local time this afternoon and get on the phone with the president at some point. Details of what the media is going to know about that as it happens are a little sketchy right now, but we do know that these people are expected. I heard it was on one of the presidential airplanes, Air Force Two, I think. And the Coast Guard announced this morning that they have reopened the port on a very, very limited basis. What that basically means is that of those dozen or so tankers sitting clear of the oil spill and waiting for word to be able to come in and pick up the output of the pipeline, they picked one of the bigger ones, the Arco Sag River, and it's making its way into Port Valdez now. It has the capability, I understand, of holding about 2 days output from the Trans-Alaska pipeline, so it looks like they'll be able to keep that flow going, or at least not worry about it for another couple of days.
Steve, just getting back to the Coast Guard, are reporters still keeping up the pressure about how a disaster of this scope could have happened, especially in light of what's been learned about the captain and his drinking history, that sort of thing?
I'd say that things are getting downright testy between Exxon and the press, and for that reason, the people are starting to put their second and third bananas out there to talk to the press instead of fielding the questions themselves. Today, the Coast Guard had a Tom Nelson talking, and he was asked that very question. He said, isn't it just a fact that your plans were just plain inadequate for a spill of this size? And you can hear his response here.
We don't know that the plan was inadequate. I mean, this is a huge spill. We've never seen anything like this before in the United States. Of course, we're going to stop. We're going to look at all the plans. Everyone concerned on every government level, and the industry is going to have to stop and look at the plans. Part of the investigation, I'm sure, will cover those plans.
That's Tom Nelson, a spokesperson for the Coast Guard. And regular briefings, there's an Exxon briefing going on right at this very moment, Corey.
Thanks. Thanks, Steve. That's Steve Heimel covering the Exxon spill from Valdez. Steve will be headed on to Cordova this afternoon to talk to fishermen there. This has been a special report on the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Prince William Sound. It's been made possible by the member stations of APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is an update on the Exxon Valdez oil spill disaster in Prince William Sound. I'm Corey Flintoff. The sablefish harvest in Prince William Sound was to have begun today. Like all other normal activities in the Sound, it's been canceled, and its future is in grave danger. The 1,000-square-mile slick is now approaching Hinchinbrook Island, and the Copper River Flats may be threatened. Bob King reports.
The latest survey flights are still out, but officials estimate the spill at 1,000 square miles. There is some confusion, however. Heavy oil spotted in Hinchinbrook entrance early Friday was not there later in the day. The Department of Environmental Conservation says spotters may be confusing oil for something else that appears as a black mark on the water, schools of arriving fish. Brad Hahn.
We sent out a crew to take a look at that. We were concerned about it as the possibility of oil being in that area, which is a sensitive area. So we sent an overflight crew down there to take a look at it, and when they dropped down, they could tell that it was herring by the fact that there were numerous birds and marine life down there, sea lions, etc.
Telling the difference between the two could be critical. Chemical dispersants were almost dropped on one school of herring. Fortunately, the fish had disappeared by the time the dispersant plane arrived. The DEC says herring spotters will be used before any future dispersant attempts. Meanwhile, there's no announcement yet from the Department of Fish and Game regarding the herring pound fishery, although one is expected later today. Officials first want to check both the water and the fish themselves for any sign of contamination before allowing a commercial fishery. More important than the size of the spill itself, perhaps, is the amount of beach impacted so far. And that now is estimated at 800 linear miles. Fish and Game's Kathy Frost says biologists are now getting an idea of how that is affecting wildlife.
On Green Island, which is in the southwestern sound, found a range of 140 to 270 oil birds per linear mile of beach. It's based on just getting out and walking and identifying, you know, whatever they can see.
Even on beaches that are clean, 15 to 20% of the birds are estimated to be contaminated. In Valdez, I'm Bob King.
An arrest warrant has been issued for former Exxon Valdez skipper Joseph Hazelwood. The state filed criminal charges against Hazelwood last night. Tests showed Hazelwood was legally drunk when he left the port of Valdez last Friday and left an unqualified third mate in charge of the vessel. Peter Kenyon reports.
Alaska Criminal Division Chief Larry Week says the state decided to move quickly against Hazelwood when it appeared there might be a chance that Hazelwood was still in Alaska and could be arrested.
Last night we got information from some airline people in Anchorage that they believed that they had seen someone looking like Captain Hazelwood walking around the Anchorage airport trying to get on an airplane. And when that opportunity to possibly arrest Captain Hazelwood, rather than try to extradite him, came up, we filed a complaint last night about 9:30.
That tip didn't pan out, and Week says Hazelwood has not been arrested and is probably out of Alaska. The state will be contacting Hazelwood's attorney to see if the former captain will return to Alaska voluntarily to face charges. If not, extradition proceedings will begin. Hazelwood is charged with three misdemeanors: operating a watercraft while intoxicated, reckless endangerment, and the negligent discharge of oil. Together, the charges carry penalties of over 2 years in jail and $15,000 in fines. A report accompanying the charges includes accounts of testimony by Exxon Valdez crew members. According to the report, one crew member says he saw the captain have four drinks prior to boarding the Exxon Valdez. Another crew member put the number of drinks at three or four. Hazelwood himself reportedly told a Fish and Wildlife officer that he had one beer in town and a couple bottles of low-alcohol beer on board the tanker. The officer said he saw one bottle of the low-alcohol beer in Hazelwood's cabin, according to the report. Hazelwood has been fired by Exxon, and the Coast Guard is moving to revoke his license. The FBI is also investigating the spill, and Week says the state investigation is continuing, checking for other possible criminal violations, either by individuals or organizations. For APRN in Juneau, I'm Peter Kenyon.
Allegations from Exxon officials that the state impeded the company's desire to use chemical dispersants to control the slick are false. That statement comes from the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, Dennis Kelso. Last night, Kelso told reporters that not only had the state not stood in the way of Exxon's request, but also that the company didn't have enough dispersants to do the job.
Using the 20-to-1 application rate recommended by Exxon, about 500,000 gallons of dispersant would be required to treat this 10 million gallon spill. On Friday, less than 4,000 gallons of dispersant were available in Valdez. It's important to remember that Friday and Saturday are particularly important times because application of dispersants can be most effective when it's during the first 24 hours.
Exxon officials couldn't be reached for comment. As to what further action the state will take, Governor Steve Cooper is arriving in Valdez today and will hold a news conference later this afternoon. Alaska has accepted aid from Norway and the Soviet Union. A Norwegian technical team is due to arrive this weekend, and a Soviet skimming vessel is en route to Prince William Sound. The Animal Rescue Center, set up to care for birds and marine mammals stricken by the Exxon oil spill, is getting a lot more business today. More than 20 birds are being treated, and the center is getting more sea otters than it can handle. Steve Heimel visited the center.
Two sea otters brought in coated with oil have died in the Animal Rescue Center, but last night nine were still alive. Scientific crews out surveying spill damage are seeing quite a few living sea otters. One group earned a scolding for corralling one and bringing it back. All three in that group required medical treatment for bites and scratches. For birds, the prospect is grim. Survey crews coming back to beaches on Green Island for the second time say the birds they see there are weakening. The state has rented a refrigerated truck to house the bird remains they expect to have coming in. John Pyatt heads the program for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
We have a tractor trailer that DEC has gotten and is parked outside the DEC headquarters. And we're going to be filling that tractor trailer to whatever degree, you know, over the next couple of months. And all those birds will be kept and documented, every single one of them, for possible litigation purposes down the road.
As I talked to him, Pyatt was carrying a plastic bag with a heavily oiled carcass of a cormorant. We opened it there on the floor. As the bag opened, the smell of crude oil filled the room.
Why? That is a heavily oiled bird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very heavily oiled. Yeah, it's a cormorant.
Uh-huh. Today is the day when bird counters and surveyors can use help. Pyatt put out the call to his fellow scientists last night and amplified that to include anyone in the spill area. He wants bird carcasses.
We're trying to enlist help from everybody, who's including journalists who happen to be out there and going on these beaches, because we may not get a chance to get to all these beaches. And if we do, the birds might be gone. They'll be scavenged. They'll disappear with time and tide.
They're continuing to report scavenging of the oiled birds by bald eagles. Oddly, it's not known how much that will harm the eagles. There's never been an oil spill in the home of the bald eagle before.
I think this may be a somewhat unique situation. You know, the eagle populations are fairly reduced, and you know, throughout the U.S., this is Alaska is you know, the stronghold for the bald eagle in North America.
If you go by the fate of other birds that swallow oil, the prognosis for the eagles is not good. Oil seems to wipe out their ability to absorb food.
They can't absorb the food they do eat. Actually, it's kind of amazing. I've autopsied eider ducks that were just jammed full of food, absolutely blocked. But they were completely emaciated. There was no meat on them, no fat whatsoever. Just, you know, they had used up all the reserves, and they were pigging out on food, but not a bit of it was digested, even in the intestines, where normally by the time you look down there, that's just nothing but goop. That was full of, you know, food items that these birds eat was never digested.
This animal cleanup is not a pretty or romantic affair. Outside the Sea Otter Center last night, you could hear the animal screams. For APRN in Valdez, I'm Steve Heimel.
And this has been a special update on the Exxon Valdez oil spill disaster in Prince William Sound. This coverage is made possible by the member stations of APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.